From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris, and we begin this hour with the latest jobs report. In a word, disappointing. The unemployment rate ticked up to 9.1%. That's because, according to the Labor Department, employers added just 54,000 jobs in May. Not long ago, the economy was adding 200,000 jobs a month. NPR's Chris Arnold reports on the latest numbers and why they suddenly went south.
Right now, there are 13.9 million Americans looking for work. So adding 54,000 jobs in a month, that doesn't get you very far. Economists had been expecting three times more job growth in May.
Well, clearly, this is a disappointing report.
Randall Krosner is an economist at the University of Chicago. He's also a former governor of the Federal Reserve Board. So he pays close attention to where the economy's headed.
The private sector is not continuing to generate jobs at the rate that we thought it was.
So most people probably want to know, though, just how bad is that? Okay, and how disappointed were you? I mean, you know, when you saw 54,000, did you grab your head and, you know, moan? or was it like, oh, yeah, okay, I guess that's a little worse than expected, you know?
One should never overreact to any one number. And even though that the previous numbers were revised down a bit, this is not a sea change. This is a disappointment. But we still have reasonably good job growth the previous 2 months. So we shouldn't put our heads in our hands yet.
Still, President Obama today acknowledged the obstacles to job growth.
Even though the economy is growing, even though it's created more than 2 million jobs over the past 15 months, we still face some tough times. We still face some challenges.
The president was speaking at a Jeep Chrysler factory in Toledo, Ohio, and he used several auto and truck and Jeep metaphors to explain the situation, some with varying degrees of success.
We're going to pass through some rough terrain that even a Wrangler would have a hard time with. We know that. Say, Wrangler can go over anything, huh?
As far as why last month saw such weak job gains, there are several reasons, actually. Rising oil prices could have made employers nervous about the future. There have been ongoing financial problems in Europe. Also, Krosner says there was that huge earthquake and tsunami.
The tragedy in Japan. People seem to forget that Japan is still roughly the second largest economy in the world. And effectively, the economy shut down for a very long period of time.
Krosner says many U.S. companies need Japanese-made parts, and some suffered slowdowns. And after gaining jobs in recent months, the manufacturing sector altogether lost 5,000 jobs in May.
To me, the ultimate question here is this a temporary lull? Or have we kind of taken another downward turn?
John Graham is a finance professor at Duke University, and he heads up a quarterly survey of top financial officers at 1,000 different companies.
We just closed the survey at about 6 a.m. this morning. Two things jump out at me.
Graham says first, nearly half of all companies say that they're either actively hiring more workers or they would like to hire.
I mean, I think that's a pretty positive situation. Only about 10% said they felt they were overstaffed right now.
Also, Graham says for current workers, a surprising number of companies, 61%, said that by the end of the year, they'll be restoring work hours to pre-recession levels. Many are also restoring matching 401k retirement contributions.
Which I think is a really good thing. I'm kind of surprised in a positive way that companies are restoring benefits more rapidly than I expected.
And Graham expects to see more job growth, but he thinks it'll still be at a pretty sluggish pace. He thinks it'll take 2 years to get the jobless rate below 8%, so unemployment promises to be a central issue in next year's presidential election. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
With a new jobs report showing that hiring has slowed significantly, the White House went on the offensive today. President Obama was in Ohio, arguing that the bailout of Chrysler and General Motors saved thousands of jobs that otherwise would have disappeared. The president visited a Chrysler plant in Toledo, where he announced the government's sale of its final 6% stake in Chrysler to Italian automaker Fiat.
So this industry is back on its feet, repaying its debts, gaining ground. Because of you, we can once again say that the best cars in the world are built right here in the U.S. of A., right here in Ohio, right here in the Midwest.
The resurrection of the auto industry is emerging as a theme in President Obama's reelection campaign, and so we called on someone to help us look deeper into this claim that the White House has helped save Detroit. David Shepardson is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Detroit News. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Michelle.
Now, is this a fair claim? Is the auto industry indeed out of the woods?
It's certainly out of the woods in the sense that it's going to be around for a while. But no, certainly long term, 5, 10, 15 years from now, the companies are going to have to continue to build products that people want to buy. But these are companies that can now make profits, selling far fewer cars. They're leaner, and they're just in a position to be profitable, even if sales aren't what they were 5 or 10 years ago.
So they're in a position to be profitable. But what we're hearing here is a sort of slowly emerging theme that the White House saved Detroit, saved the auto industry. True?
Both President Bush and President Obama did save the auto industry, no question about it. Remember in 2008, GM and Chrysler were out of money. They were going to collapse, and Congress didn't act. President Bush opted to use $17 billion of TARP money to save General Motors and Chrysler. He basically threw the ball into the president's lap in January, and President Obama opted to put both GM and Chrysler through bankruptcy, add another $60 billion to that bailout, and then restructure those companies in a very quick fashion.
How much did the bailouts and the loan guarantees cost taxpayers? How big a stake does the U.S. still have in these companies? And has that money, or will that money, be recouped?
In the case of Chrysler, government has agreed to sell its remaining stake in the company. As a result, the taxpayers will lose about $1.3 billion of the $12.5 billion invested in Chrysler. At current stock prices, the government would likely lose about $10 billion on the bailout of General Motors. So somewhere in the $14 billion range is what taxpayers ultimately will probably be on the hook for.
Did the bailout actually save jobs and create new ones? Because we heard President Obama today tick through a lot of numbers and a lot of statistics, sure, claiming that these are jobs that might have been lost if they had not showed up with these guaranteed loans. Did they actually create new jobs as well?
Absolutely. March 2009, even the Obama administration is divided. Do we save Chrysler? There was never an argument whether General Motors was going to survive, but Chrysler was in a far weaker position. There's no question that Chrysler would have collapsed. There were no other buyers for the company, and it would have resulted in the loss of tens of thousands of jobs.
So you hail from Detroit. You cover Washington. Right. It sounds like, in listening to you, that the White House is standing on firm ground when they make this claim that they've helped resurrect Detroit. And yet, there are a lot of people who do not agree, who think that the bailouts were a bad idea. They thought it then. They still think it now. And they think what actually saved Detroit was bankruptcy, not bailouts.
Well, right. And well, in fact, of course, GM and Chrysler did ultimately go through bankruptcy. The argument you hear from Republicans is one, that no public money should have been used, that the company should have gone to the private sector. The reality was, in December 2008, no one was going to bail out Detroit except the U.S. government. If this was just about the free market, GM and Chrysler wouldn't exist. The impact to workers, to these struggling states, it meant literally overnight hundreds of thousands of people losing their jobs, not just at Chrysler, at the dealers in every state across the country, at the suppliers.
And the president talked about that.
Right. And
today,
the president, and I think the president made an interesting point. He went to this plant in Toledo, just where they make the Jeep Wrangler, where they employ 2,000 people. But there's also 3,000 other people at suppliers that are producing parts for that vehicle. So the impact of autos on the economy and the number of jobs is very significant, and it was just too great a risk.
David Shepardson, thanks so much for coming in the studio.
Thanks, Michelle.
That's David Shepardson. He's the Washington Bureau Chief for the Detroit News. This week, the White House has been lobbying Congress to raise the federal debt ceiling. Doing so would give the government the legal authority to borrow more money, hundreds of billions of dollars more that it needs to pay its bills. Refusing to raise the debt ceiling would be an almost unprecedented move, but some conservatives argue that it's the only way to get federal spending under control. NPR's Jim Zaroli reports.
The Treasury Department says that if the debt ceiling isn't raised by August 2nd, the government will run out of money to operate. No one can say for sure what would happen at that point. Suddenly, the government would have to pick and choose what to pay. For instance, it could delay interest payments on money it's borrowed in the past, a default.
I think it would be catastrophic.
Bill Gross, managing director of the bond investing firm PIMCO, says U.S. government debt plays a central role in world finance and trade, and doing anything to undermine that is unthinkable.
It could have systemic importance, which is the same thing as saying we could have not a repeat, but certainly a mini episode similar to Lehman Brothers in 2008.
Like a lot of people, Gross believes the debt ceiling dispute will get resolved, and he doesn't think the government would ever let a default happen. Still, it's no longer as unthinkable as it once was. Billionaire investor Stanley Druckenmiller recently made headlines when he argued that a default might be worth the pain it would cause because it would force the government to tackle its debt problems. Economist James Ramsey of New York University says there's something to that argument.
As Johnson said about hanging, it concentrates the mind wonderfully. I would say that if we were in a position of not being able to pay our debts in the short term, it would concentrate the politicians' minds dramatically.
Ramsey says from the point of view of bond investors, the debt ceiling is pretty much irrelevant anyway.
The real issue is how people refer as to our seriousness of purpose in terms of meeting our obligations. That's the issue, not whether or not you raise the ceiling.
Still, the possibility of a default is a very scary prospect to most people in the markets. Some Republican senators recently argued in a letter to the White House that just talking about a default amounts to scare tactics on the administration's part. If the debt ceiling isn't raised, they say, Washington would have other options, like not paying federal employees. Assistant Treasury Secretary Mary Miller.
We would have to stop making payments to a number of constituencies. Obviously, people who work for the government, people in the military, retirees, vendors. This would have quite an impact on the economy, I think, in terms of rippling through.
The trouble, Miller says, is that the United States employs so many people that not paying them, even temporarily, would have a huge impact on the economy. It might well tip the United States back into recession. Then, too, if the stalemate went on long enough, politicians might have to choose between paying Social Security recipients and angering the bond market. And no one can be sure what choice they would make. Former Federal Reserve member Alan Blinder says a standoff would take a toll on U.S. credibility in the bond market. Blinder says investors around the world could get the impression that threatening a debt default is now part of partisan politics in the United States.
That can't be good. That cannot be good for maintaining our position as the A++ number one debtor in the world, a position we've held for a very, very long time.
Like a lot of people, Blinder believes Congress will ultimately resolve the debt ceiling dispute. The risk is that investors will be left with the nagging suspicion that U.S. government debt isn't quite as safe as they once believed. And that would have an impact not just on the U.S. economy, but around the world. Jim Zaroli, NPR News.
More in a minute from All Things Considered.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. The U.S. jobs market hit the brakes last month. Employers added just 54,000 workers in May. That is the slowest pace of hiring in 8 months. The nation's unemployment rate now stands at 9.1%. And analysts were quick to note that no president has been reelected with the unemployment rate above 7.2% since Franklin Delano Roosevelt. A gloomy report from the Labor Department overshadowed President Obama's visit to a Chrysler plant in Ohio yesterday, and NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
President Obama went to a Toledo plant where Chrysler assembles Jeep Wranglers to celebrate the automaker's comeback since a government-led bankruptcy 2 years ago. Chrysler repaid its federal loan last week, and Fiat has agreed to buy the government's remaining stake in the company. Sales are up, Chrysler's profitable again, and the U.S. auto industry has added 115,000 workers over the last 2 years.
Because of you, we can once again say that the best cars in the world are built right here in the U.S. of A., right here in Ohio, right here in the Midwest.
Mr. Obama told the assembly workers the government's rescue has paid off, not only for Chrysler and General Motors, but for their big network of parts suppliers and for the Toledo restaurants and other businesses that count on auto workers to be their customers.
After all, without you, who'd eat at Chet's? Or Inky's? Or Rudy's? Or who'd buy all those cold ones at Zinger's?
The celebration was marred, though, by the disappointing report on May job growth. With so few jobs added, unemployment inched up to 9.1%. Mr. Obama acknowledged the economy still has a long way to go.
There are always going to be bumps on the road to recover. We're going to pass through some rough terrain that even a Wrangler would have a hard time with. We know that.
The big question is whether this slowdown is just a bump in the road from which hiring will soon accelerate, or the beginning of a more worrisome trend. Forecasters had expected some drop-off in hiring as a result of high gas prices and supply disruptions following the Japanese tsunami. But economist Robert Dye of PNC Financial Services says even with that low bar, yesterday's jobs report fell short.
The thing that makes everyone sit up and take notice is simply because the other data has been weak, and we can't brush this off as a unique one-off type event. This is an indication that the economy is in worse shape than we thought it was.
Dye thinks until the housing market recovers and consumers are willing to spend freely again, hiring is likely to remain stuck in low gear. And don't look for the kind of aggressive government help that rescued Chrysler.
There is no appetite for dipping back into the budget and saying we need another stimulus program. We need to accelerate federal spending to get the economy forward. That's not going to happen.
The big push in Washington this summer is finding ways to cut government spending, not increase it. The president's economic advisor, Austin Goolsbee, says times have changed over the last 2 years.
We've clearly transitioned away from teetering on the edge of depression to fragile recovery, and I think the president's been pretty clear that the main driver of recovery has got to be the private sector.
And until demand picks up, the private sector will be in no hurry to hire. Like many economists, PNC's Dye has lowered his forecast of economic growth for the second half of the year to just 3%. That's not much encouragement for the millions of people still looking for work.
My expectation is that we do generate enough jobs to bring the unemployment rate down slowly, but slowly is the key word. I think if we're lucky, we finish the year maybe around 8.5 and keep going from there.
Unemployment at that level could spell trouble for the president as he tries to hang on to his own job in 2012. Scott Horsley, NPR News, The White House.